You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Orbetello.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
I'm 200 metres to go. We're outside the camping car of Renato Viviani, not Elia. Elia's out there trying to win the sprint. His dad's looking, he's starting to edge forward in his seat. Do you think he's going to do it?
Oh, he looks nervous, doesn't he?
We've been stealing his Wi-Fi for the last 15 minutes.
Well, he put the seat down in the front so he got a clear view of his television, but he hasn't invited us into the warm.
I think he's in a good position. I think we're going to see a celebration here, I think. 100 metres to go.
And the rain starts to fall, and Pascal Ackermann in the Ciclamino jersey versus here he comes, Viviani.
Here he comes.
He's got it, he's got it, hasn't he? He's got it. Yes, he's got it. There we go.
Si festeggia, no?
Grande, cazzo.
Comunque, lei era freddo, no? Cioè, non tradiva le emozioni.
Mamma mia.
It was quite cool, wasn't it? Yeah.
Like it was never in doubt.
No. Ci ha sempre creduto.
Sì.
Oh, a little tear in the eye as well.
A little tear in the eye.
Nice.
Lovely.
Grande.
Grazie.
We had a really good team, so... Also, Bob is our rider for GC. He put in the best position the left corner, right corner, the chicane. So the team was perfect today for this. We had the knife and the mouth. I started my work last 400 meters. Behind me was Ackermann. So, and Ackermann was Elia was behind Ackermann, so the perfect position for him. So it's a perfect day.
Welcome to a chilly and grey Orbetello. My name's Lionel Burney. I'm with Daniel Freeb. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Lionel.
And that was Fabio Sabatini of De Koenig Quickstep, who thought it was a perfect day for them because they thought Elia Viviani had won stage three of the Giro d'Italia, his first in the Italian national champions jersey in this race. But quite a few minutes later, the result was overturned and Viviani was disqualified for a flick to the left which cut up Matteo Moschetti of Trek Segafredo, who crossed the line in fifth place. Viviani relegated, and Fernando Gaviria, the new stage winner for UAE Team Emirates.
Napalm, I'm going to do something really quickly. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask Mario Cipollini's old lead-out man, Mario Scirea, who's standing behind us, whether it was the right decision. Mario, un intervento al volo? Una parola sola. Decisione giusta, sì o no? Disqualified?
Non ho ancora visto.
What a letdown. He hasn't seen it.
That old one. That old one.
Okay. But we've got another Italian.
Welcome to the podcast, Ciro Scognamiglio of Gazzetta dello Sport. Hello, Ciro.
Dear listener, so happy to stay with you again. And Lionel, you said something before about a chilly Orbetello, windy Orbetello. Well, it's true, but dear listener, you have to remember that also with this weather condition, Orbetello is really much better than any other mountains in the world.
Because this it's by clear. The sea. Because it's by the seaside.
Exactly. The sea is the right answer to every question. It's simple.
Ciro, tell us a bit about Orbetello. Like, how is it? What's it famous for? What is it? Do the Romani, people from Rome, come here on holiday? Do the Toscani, the people from Tuscany?
You know, listeners, all this stuff. Daniel is certainly much more clever than me. He's really an... It's really an open-minded guy, you know. I'm really more closed. You see, you can imagine that the most important, the only important thing of Orbetello is the fact that it's near to the sea, it's near to the beach. And also, It's also in front of a marvelous Italian island, Isola del Giglio. Don't forget this.
It would look a lot better if the sun was shining, though. But one question that we need to have a definitive answer to, if Mario Scuderia can't answer it, was it the correct decision to relegate Elia Viviani?
Well, really difficult to say. I saw the images of the sprint several times. More yes than no, in my opinion. Well, we have to consider that it's not an easy decision, and Viviani was really upset after the finish. Sorry, dear listeners, because now my chief is calling me. I have to go, but I will come back.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
I like because it's comfortable, and also because we have more bibsure. We have winter bibsure, summer bibsure, so can I use more bibsure for the winter, for summer, for all. Hi, I'm Sasha Modolo and team EF Education First. The chamois also is very comfortable. For me, it's the best bibsure in the world.
Thanks to Rafa, our sponsors here at the Cycling Podcast. Their support has enabled us to cover all three Grand Tours for the last few years, and we will be here all the way to Verona, well, more or less, give or take. Are you going to Verona, Daniel, at the end?
Yes, very much so, Napalm, but the weather needs to improve, doesn't it, before then? I mean, I've never known the start of a Giro to have such terrible weather.
It is cold. I'm wearing my Rafa jacket, which is keeping me warm, fortunately. This is the first week of the Giro d'Italia, of course, and at the end of the first week, we'll be awarding our first Pedaleur de Charme award. If you see anyone doing some charming pedaling out on the roads of the Giro d'Italia this week, not just good cycling, is it? It's style and verve and sportsmanship and all of that kind of thing to get a nomination.
I think we might have a contender later in the episode, but I'm not going to reveal who it is yet.
Okay, well, we will be collecting nominations on Twitter and on our Facebook page. Twitter is at @cycling_podcast, and the winner will receive, there'll be a little vote on Twitter, a little poll on Twitter at the end of the week, and the winner will be presented with a Rafa Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. And if you want a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt, or a Pedaleurs de Charme t-shirt, or cycling jersey, or cap, they are all in stock in all sizes on the Rafa website, rafa.cc. Now, Ciro is back. He's had to answer an important question from his editor, Luca. But the big question, was it the correct decision? And the rider he cut up, Moschetti, a young Italian rider with Trek Segafredo, he was never going to win the stage, was he? It wasn't like Viviani's move blocked Gaviria or blocked a rider who was in contention for the victory.
Yes, exactly. And also another factor was the windy, was really tough. And so maybe, well, we have to consider everything. I think that the decision has been easy. And my question, listeners, at least my point of view after more or less 2 hours of the finish of the stage, I really don't know.
In terms of the race, I mean, it was a really flat stage in terms of action and drama. There really wasn't any until 5 kilometres to go when there was that crash which split the peloton. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Was there a sense of relief that you at least have a story for Gazzetta dello Sport, the disqualification of the Italian champion?
And also the fact that Matteo Moschetti, a really young guy, we have to remember that he's only 22 and his first Grand Tour, and so he arrived, maybe without this move of Viviani could have been second. So also this is a good story, but Lionel, if there aren't a story, we invent the story. Without any, I mean, Ciro, it's not a problem, dear listener.
Ciro, tell us a bit more about Moschetti quickly before you go.
Really quickly, he's really a pupil. I mean, he was discovered by Ivan Basso. He lives near Milano, in the same hometown of Andrea Noè, the oldest pink jersey of the Giro. He loves Pietro Mennea, the former Athletic Maverick, very famous, and I think it could be the next big thing sprint of up. Italian sprint.
Well, Ciro, sprinting off. I mean, that's in a straight line, fortunately.
I don't think cheer is the next big thing in Italian sprinting.
No.
Based on what we've just seen and past performances.
What was your view, though, Daniel? And what else did we pick up at the finish? Because Fernando Gaviria, the stage winner now, didn't look overly delighted to win in those circumstances.
Well, and he wasn't. He said on Italian TV that he didn't really want to win in these circumstances. He considered it a defeat. What Viviani did hadn't affected Gaviria. Gaviria had a crash a couple of weeks ago that I don't think was very well documented, but I was speaking to some people at UAE, his team, this morning, and they felt that he probably needed two or three stages to really kind of warm up the or fire up the jets. But yeah, he was quick enough today, wasn't he? Although, you know, Viviani had beaten him fairly cleanly. Emphatically.
Yeah, emphatically, certainly. I mean, this suggestion that the wind had something to do with Viviani's move from right to left, I don't buy that at all. But I also don't think it was a deliberate attempt to shut the door on anyone behind him, because there was nobody really in his shadow. There was, it was him versus Ackermann versus Gaviria, and he came through so strongly. Really, the race was won at the not long after he'd made that move across, and the rider he impeded was not going to win the stage, but that's the rules, I guess. I mean, it's more for the danger of the move rather than the way it affected the result, I guess.
Yeah, and I think in situations like this, you defer to people who really know and who have been in sprint finishes before. And Alessandro Petacchi is one of the main pundits on Italian TV. They're very patriotic generally. They would have wanted Viviani to win in the Tricolor jersey, but Petacchi and numerous other pundits on Italian TV all agreed that he should have been disqualified.
Well, you mentioned the Italian national champions jersey. I'm going to float a ridiculous theory of my own after Richard's crazy. I mean, I don't know what he'd been on yesterday afternoon where to come up with his theory about Team Sky's Team Ineos is Egan Bernal, but my theory is that this is the beginning of the curse of the vertical Italian champions jersey. I checked out with De Koenig Quickstep what it's all about, and it's basically because they just fancied doing something special, making a different jersey, because Viviani doesn't reckon he can defend it. The course doesn't suit him. The Italian national championship course this year doesn't suit him, so he wanted to come to the Giro, win stages in a jersey that looks a little bit different, and it's not worked out for him today.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast, team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, interrupting our Giro coverage to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Ordnance Survey. If you're planning an adventure in the UK, use the award-winning Ordnance Survey maps. For just £2.99 a month, you can get all the Ordnance Survey maps for the whole of Great Britain across all your devices, and you can even print them out too if you prefer to have a paper copy. You can find new walking, cycling and running routes or create your own. You can view drone-like footage of your routes with 3D fly-throughs. You can explore what's around you with augmented reality. And as I said, you can download and print the maps before you go, so you don't need to worry about whether you've got a phone signal if you're exploring somewhere remote. Now, Daniel, if you were anything like me as a child, when I was just discovering cycling, maps played a hugely important part in getting out and finding the countryside around me, and buying the paper Ordnance Survey maps and laying them out on the dining room table and plotting my routes with a really key part of my cycling learning, and maps play a huge part in that today.
Well, it's very apt that we should be talking about this at the Giro, Lionel, because the Giro is almost, well, famous certainly among journalists for its maps. And there was the Giro has always really had an official cartographer, and there's one gentleman in particular who's really marked the history of the Giro, Cesare Sangalli, who was the official cartographer of the Giro for 50 years. He used to use a quill and ink. Was very particular about the kind of ink he used, and it's something the Giro has always taken very seriously, and they've produced these, you know, these maps that which are objects of great beauty.
Well, they have a house style, don't they? And you can say exactly the same about Ordnance Survey. If you showed me an Ordnance Survey from sort of 50 paces, I think I'd be able to tell you that it was, you know, a Land Ranger. They've got their own distinct look, and not just that, but they're, you know, it's the accuracy of them as well, isn't it? And you kind of learn what all the symbols mean. You look at the key on the back and work out what everything is. You mentioned the Giro and, you know, the kind of the misleading aspect of some of their mapping, you know, leaving off the severity of climbs to maybe hoodwink the riders into thinking the course is not as difficult as it actually is. Ordnance Survey wouldn't do that because obviously accuracy is their watchword. If you want to get a free 7-day trial, go to osmaps.uk, or you can download at the App Store, or sign up and pay £2.99 a month and you can get all of the Ordnance Survey maps on your devices. Well, cheers, Daniel.
Cheers, Napalm.
Yeah, you may have guessed we've relocated to our lodgings for the evening. Another very fine place, Daniel. I think you're averaging probably a solid 9.25 out of 10 for the two places we've stayed in so far.
We'll talk about the missing 0.75 later.
Well, we should just recap a little bit from the sprint. Disappointment, of course, for Elia and Renato Viviani. I would say joy for Fernando Gaviria, but he really didn't celebrate his victory on the
muted
podium.
Muted joy, wasn't it?
Muted joy, indeed. Should just say Arnaud Démare was second and Pascal Ackermann, yesterday's winner, was third. And Giro's new pet project, Matteo Moschetti, was fourth. The surprise of the sprinters today, Caleb Ewan down in 15th place. Didn't really see what had happened to him, but not the sort of result you'd expect, particularly when you look and see that Simon Yates and Miguel Angel Lopez were both ahead of him. May have got boxed in a bit on the run-in. There was some movement on the GC, particularly Theo Gegenhart of Team Ineos, who was lying seventh overall this morning, was one of the riders caught up behind that crash with around 5 kilometres to go, and he finished with four of his teammates, 1:28 down, so he's tumbled down the overall standings. Everyone else seemed to get through more or less okay. At the finish, I saw Simon Yates come back to the Mitchelton Scott bus and had a very quick word with him about how his day had gone. And then I spoke to his teammate Luke Durbridge, who had spent the whole of his day protecting Simon Yates, keeping him out of trouble, keeping him out of the wind. And this is what they had to say.
Yeah, Simon, a nervous old day in the wind. It didn't split up until 5k to go, but how much work did your team have to do to make sure you were never in any danger?
It wasn't too bad, it's true, if I'm honest. I was only like maybe the last 40k or something that was really stressful or nervous. A lot of the sections that were, I think teams were expecting to be crosswind were more tailwind. So it was okay, but the guys did a phenomenal job protecting me. Really, I think I've never been outside the top 20 until the final there. And I've not touched the wind also. So a really good day for me.
On a day like that, when it's so windy all day, can you explain to our listeners why there were no splits?
Well, you've seen it sort of time and time again. It's in like in the Tour de France or the Giro d'Italia or the Vuelta. When you've got 10 leaders and everyone has 7 teammates, everyone's job is to make sure their teammate stays in the front. So what ends up happening is that it just gets very, very stressful, but everyone's just rides and blocks the road. So like what we had in the last 20K would have been carnage if it was a classic Tour of Flanders, things like that. But because it's a stage race, everyone's still trying to conserve energy, so everyone rides next to each other. And we were just blocking the road. We had perfect position, so Simon was sitting nice there. That's why we don't really want to split it, but we don't want to be missed out if someone does. So it is a tricky thing, and look, it is probably not the most exciting racing to watch at home, but there is a lot of stress in the bunch, and it's just hard to explain. We were switched on from kilometre zero to 5.5 hours, so I'm mentally drained, maybe not as physically as probably it looks at home.
Is it a case that if you're not moving up, you're slipping backwards?
Exactly. As soon as you touch the brakes, you're 3 wheels back, and to get back to the front's nearly impossible. So.
And in terms of not wanting to split it, is it because the risk is too great and the reward might not be big enough?
Exactly. You use a lot of energy for something that may or may not happen. And, you know, we've got 3 weeks stage race and we don't necessarily split it 80k to go and nothing happens and we've just used all our bullets. So, yeah, it is a game of chess. And, so I think we played it quite well today.
interesting there from Durbridge about the mental energy expended today, the concentration required, and also that technique of riding fully across the road to prevent anyone forming any echelons. You know, that wasn't them pootling along, not taking it seriously. They're elbow to elbow across the road to prevent anyone from putting it, you know, in a long line, and that's when the splits would happen. And of course, that point about risk and reward, no one really wants to be the first team to lay it all on the line and then end up losing out, and especially when you've got a GC rider.
Well, Napalm, we thought some of the GC riders might be vulnerable today, didn't we? They all coped pretty well with the wind, and their teams were very alive to the danger, particularly in the finale. It was noticeable that they were all the right side of the split after that crash, as far as I could see anyway. Any casualties? Is there any even sort of mid-level casualties today?
Well, Theo Gegenhardt, really, who did very well in the opening time trial, 7th overall this morning, and a minute and 28 conceded. And, well, Richard Carapaz as well, although he wasn't a victim of that split. I think he'd had a mechanical problem before. He lost 46 seconds, as did Domenico Pozzovivo, although Pozzovivo is here probably working for Vincenzo Nibali in the Bahrain Merida team anyway, but a little bit of time lost for those two.
Yeah, and I think there will be a lot of relief tonight. Just when we spoke to some riders this morning and team managers in Vinci, some thought that the race would blow apart very early on the route today. Others thought that it would blow apart in the last 30 or 40 kilometres. And neither of those things came to pass, did they? I know Astana were very relieved, because I think they're very conscious, as we mentioned in the podcast yesterday, of the fact that they've come here with a team that's very much built for climbing, built for the mountains. And they've really only got a couple of guys who were noted rulers in the team, so that would be Andre Zaitz and Manuele Boaro. But they did just fine, didn't they? So yeah, they were pretty anxious in Vinci. Giuseppe Martinelli is their head director sportif here, and he's won Giro d'Italia with Marco Pantani, Gilberto Simoni, Damiano Cunego. So he's just about the most experienced and successful decorated Giro d'Italia director sportif around. And even he admitted this morning that they were pretty afraid of the wind and they were afraid of today's stage, but it all turned out okay in the end. So you're going to hear from Martinelli before the stage, and then Dario Cataldo, who was one of Superman Lopez's key lieutenants today, after the stage.
We
really have to be careful today. It's absolutely fundamental. Days like today are the most dangerous of all. Everyone knows it, and we just have to hope there isn't a team who will try to blow the race apart from the gun. We know the finish is going to be complicated because Orbetello is in the middle of the sea, and it's going to be a bit of a massacre. But we're just hoping it doesn't go ballistic at the start. It's not only Zaitz who could be key today, it's everyone. Our team's built for the climbs, and to be honest, we're a bit afraid of days like today. There are a lot of other teams in the same boat as us, and there will also be teams that will want to blow the whole thing up. But that's just bike racing, isn't it?
The last 7 kilometers, the peloton was very, very tight. Everybody wanted to stay in the front, and was very hard to take the right position. But we did it in the right moment before we had the crash on the side, and we passed just in the right moment. So at least we had the final, we were there to bring Miguel in the right position, and we are safe.
Martinelli told me that you were pretty worried about this stage, and you were worried that it was going to kick off and it was going to be Casino from kilometer zero. It didn't even happen in the finale. Why not?
But it didn't happen in the beginning because everybody was scared for the final, so all the teams were thinking to have more riders as possible to work in the final. But actually in the final the wind was not that strong, and the peloton was split because of the crash, not because of the wind. But everybody was scared, and when it's like this anyway, there's a big tension, there's big everybody wants to stay in the front, so it's always dangerous anyway, even if the wind doesn't make the difference. So we are safe at least.
And Superman's positioning was super.
Yes, in the final, yes. Before, not that much, but we passed in the right moment and everything is going right.
Okay, Daniel, quiz time for you. Dario Cataldo and three other riders have something in common in this Giro d'Italia. What is it?
They'll win the baby Giro.
They did. They did. Can you name the other three?
I can name Sivakov and I can... You said that you were going to set me this question earlier and I should have gone away and researched it. Because now I look like a buffoon. Who did I say earlier? I gave one name and it was wrong.
Well, the four baby Giro winners in the field are Dario Cataldo, who won in 2006, Mattia Cattaneo, who won in 2011, Joe Dombrowski, 2012, and Pavel Sivakov, 2017. Not the greatest indicator of future success, is it, the baby Giro? Certainly looking at that list. I mean, they're all obviously here and racing. Sivakov probably will end up being the best of that quartet anyway.
It was once Napalm, but in the last 10 years it's undergone quite a few sort of changes and tweaks and facelifts, and there was the period of the Giro Bio, the sort of the bio, the organic, the, you know, the vegan under 23 Giro. I don't even remember that. There were a couple of years when all of the riders sort of slept together in a dormitory kind of arrangement, and they had to give up their mobile phones, and they were only allowed access to a race doctor. And it was an initiative on the part of the race organisers to try to, well, clean up the baby Giro after a couple of sort of notorious incidents and notorious additions that were blighted by doping affairs. But that didn't, it wasn't really an unqualified success, so much so that it reverted to a more traditional format. But as you say, it's not been the best guide of future success in recent years.
So what do we make then of the way that the GC riders all kept out of trouble? I mean, they'll be pleased given that it was so windy out there and a long stage as well. And there's a couple more long stages before the weekend. But you were saying, as we came away from the finish this evening, how uncharacteristic the weather is. It doesn't feel Grand Tour weather, does it? The cold and the grey and the drizzle. It's not made Orbitello look its best, I don't think. But also, this is not really a very Giro opening week, is it? Normally, well, last year we saw all of those opportunities for Simon Yates to go pinching seconds. It's not going to be the same this year at all. It's going to be much more focus on the sprinters until Sunday, I would have thought.
Yes, Napalm. Usually we see sort of punchers to the fore. We see a couple of finishes on short sort of steep rises into, you know, often finishing in hilltop towns. And you know, there are usually some opportunities there for the GC guys to make headway. Not the case this year. That said, with the weather looking as ominous as it is, according to the forecast anyway, and I think there'll be some concerns about greasy roads and wet weather in the next couple of days and crashes, and it's going to be stressful. And with those, you know, with the weather, with the long stages, with the stress, that nervous energy, a lot of riders will start to feel kind of mentally tired, I think, at the end of the first week.
Could see something a bit different tomorrow in Frascati, I think, and Saturday in L'Aquila, I think, as well. But we shall wait and see how that pans out tomorrow. Just before we move on, the first appearance of Corrections Corner for this Giro d'Italia.
Eek.
Our departed leader, Richard Moore, said last night, or he failed to correct Matt White, who said that no one had won the Tour of Romandy and the Giro d'Italia in the same year. Matt White did say in modern cycling. So, I mean, where do you draw that line? Because in 1987...
modern cycling in the last 3 years.
Well, in 1987, Stephen Roach, the Irish rider, did win the Tour of Romandy and then the Giro d'Italia. I'd also say there was a fortnight's gap between the two races back then, which is a week longer than now. But the funny thing about that was...
And Tony Rominger also did it in the 90s, I think. Someone said this to me on Twitter today. I can't be responsible for everything that my Twitter followers send in, but I haven't checked.
But the point is, it has happened. It's just where you draw the line of the modern era. I mean, it hasn't certainly hasn't happened in the last 10, 15 years. So, but the funny thing about this yesterday was that, as Matt White said, that no one had won the Tour of Romandy and the Giro d'Italia in the same year, Stephen Roach was actually stood pretty much on Richard Moore's shoulder. So, yeah, it's a good job he didn't overhear. He could have done a live corrections corner, couldn't he, Stephen Roach there?
Stephen, hi. How's it going? How are you?
Good to see you.
You're well. You're well.
Yesterday, then, are you surprised, or pretty much what you expected from Roglic in particular?
Not surprised at all.
Also, anyone who was hoping to get one of Stacey Snyder's fantastic handmade Giro d'Italia cycling podcast mugs, well, she made 50 and they sold out on the first day. The idea was that they would sell over the course of the Giro. We've been pretty much taken by surprise. The demand has outstripped supply. And because they're handmade, it's not easy to rustle up another batch. But Stacey is going to make another 50 and keep your ears on the podcast and look out in our newsletter for details of when they go on sale. If you want one, you may have to move quite quickly because I think demand is still pretty high.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. They've been with us since the start of our daily Giro d'Italia coverage in 2016. Thank you very much to them. All our listeners can get 25% off the whole range of Science in Sport products by going to scienceinsport.com. filling their basket with goodies and then entering the code SISCP25.
Gianni Savio, team manager, Androni Giocattoli, Sidermec, il modulo,
the formation.
Yes, 1-4.
One goalkeeper, one defender.
1-4-2-1. One is Marco Frapporti to enter in the breakaway, as yesterday, for the classement of kilometers. In breakaway, and four are the riders to help, because it's not so easy go in breakaway. So for Marco Frapporti, four riders that help him to enter in breakaway
midfield,
and two the men of overall classement, Mattia Cattaneo and Fausto Masnada, and one I hope for having good results is Manuel Belletti.
Il bomber.
Il bomber. Il bomber Manuel Belletti.
That can only be one man, Daniel. Who was it?
It is. It's the Silver Fox. Gianni Savio. He's promised to give us... No, he's not going to give us the formation every day. That would be giving away too much information, I fear. But this is going to be a semi-regular feature. We think Gianni Savio, football obsessed, as he said to us last year, Lauren, he's a sportman, and he can't live without sport. He can't live without football, and he insists on giving his cycling team a football style formation before every stage at the Giro. The bomber, it's a bomber, Lionel. He's kind of a centre forward. In Italian, il bomber. And the bomber today was Belletti, and their sprinter, how did he get on? Eighth, wasn't he?
Eighth, yeah, not bad. Interesting to see what they do, Androni, this year, because last year, of course, they famously got in a break on every road stage, I think, didn't they?
Correct.
Throughout the whole Giro. And before the race, Gianni Savio said they weren't going to try and do that again because, firstly, they couldn't beat it, they could only match it.
Unless they got in a break on a time trial, that's what he said.
Indeed. Well, I don't think that's actually possible, is it? Although Tom Dumoulin tried to get in a break by setting off first, and he didn't get caught. So, nonsense that. Their tactics this year will be somewhat different, I guess. I suppose we'll look out for Masnada when there's some sort of hilly-ish.
L'anguilla di Brambilla, the eel of Brambilla.
Wow. Did you know smoked eel is a speciality of Orbitello?
I didn't know that. I'm not really into my seafood. I
looked in the Garibaldi today to see what we might enjoy this evening. I don't really like eel. I don't think you should eat it, really. It's funny stuff. funny substance, really. Anyway, Gianni Savio, what age is he now? 71?
I think he's immortal. He's ageless. But he's, yeah.
We saw him running across the square in Bologna yesterday morning. Quite a good lick.
But he goes running every morning and he wears a headband. Much wow. like yours truly.
Wow. Where is the Andrea Taffi Mappe visor?
It's missing in action at the moment. I definitely was in possession of the Mappe visor a couple of days ago, but it's gone AWOL. It's somewhere in my suitcase, I hope.
Is it like the rest of your running kit, damp on the back seat of the car?
Yeah, possibly. Anyway, moving on.
What next?
Well, Lionel, you know, Androni Giocattoli are one of the, I suppose, the minor teams. We don't want to belittle them because, you know, they'll probably play an important role, particularly in these first, the first week or so, when there'll be days when the breakaway is the only thing of any note that happens before the last 20 kilometres. Of course, we saw an interesting breakaway today, didn't we, with the Nippo Fantini rider, Show
Hatsuyama.
Show being, the Italians always talk about Lo Show, the you know, the incredible sort of performance that someone...
The Show.
The Show. There he goes. It's easy to translate. Lionel learns Italian.
Not difficult, is it, Italian? Not difficult.
Anyway, Show was responsible for Lo Show today, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a notable omission from this episode because we started with, obviously, Elia Viviani's dad and then a bit from Ciro, so there was no tale of the Tapper today. That will make its return tomorrow, but really, there was no tale to tell, was there? Show Hatsuyama was up the road from kilometre 1 to kilometre 145, 144 kilometres out in front on his own, and really, you said it on the as we were driving down at the point where the race really was quite a long way behind schedule. The bunch were probably hoping that he would get a wriggle on and perhaps open up a bit more of a gap and give them a proper kind of day off. In the end, they had to kind of leave him out there. They left him hanging as long as they could, but caught with still a long way to go to the finish. And then really the bunch took control of matters by not really allowing anything else to get away. So a strange day out really for Hatsuyama there. After his teammate and the other Japanese rider in the race failed to make the time cut on the opening day in Bologna.
But Lionel, talking about the more sort of unsung teams here at the Giro, Israel Cycling Academy are here, and they've got one very interesting rider on their roster. He is an Eritrean-born Swedish rider named Awet Gebremedin. I think I've got that pronunciation about 60% right. Awet has got a fascinating story because he was an asylum seeker in Sweden. He was riding for Eritrea, I think, in the 2013 World Championships in Florence. Instead of going home to Eritrea, he decided to seek asylum in Europe, and he ended up in Sweden. And he's here riding the Giro. It's the end of an incredible journey for him. A real sort of rags to, well, not quite riches yet, but certainly an extraordinary achievement to get here to the Giro d'Italia. I mean, a few years ago, when he was in Sweden, just after he'd arrived, he was collecting empty bottles and taking them to sort of recycling bins or the recycling machine in the supermarket, and using the money that you get back from that to buy a mountain bike. And I asked him about that this morning in Vinci and about what it means to him to be here at the Giro d'Italia.
It was nice because to collect bottle and after to have bike is... Nobody can imagine it, and just the people try to collect and to survive the life. But I was doing survive life and everything, and also collect for to have bike. So it was good.
How much do you get for a bottle in Sweden? Can you remember? Is it a few cents, 5 cents, or
for one bottle? Mm. You can you got for 10 bottle 1 euro.
So it took a long time to save up for bikes and equipment.
And I was with mountain bike doing it, and it was fast for me. In 2 months, I collect 2,000 euro. Yeah. So in 1 month, 1,000. all the day full gas for that. And I get motivation also to do it because per day I had like 30 euro, something, sometimes more for that. And I was motivated to do it. And I when I saw to I can do, I can have bike, and it's, I go full gas.
Albert, was this before or after you were recognized as a refugee in Sweden?
It was in the middle of the thing, because first when I asked asylum, they didn't accept that because I had a visa for Italy. And after I had to stay just with family and friend. And in the, yeah, when I saw it's 2 months to go, like they will say okay. And I start to do it, and I did it also. Yeah.
And Albert, does this feel like the end of a journey you already content with, you know, riding the Giro d'Italia, and is that enough for you, or do you want more from your career, and you think now that you'll be around for 5 more years and riding a lot of these races?
Yeah, for sure. I don't like just to ride. It's my always what I my is my word, always word. I don't like to ride just going and around the guys and ride. No, I want to do some result, no more. Also, I want to continue also for more, if it's possible, 6-5. You see, Italy, we like too much also, because we have history from past. They was in Eritrea 100 years, so they built everything in Italy. So, yeah, we already, just we are thinking, we don't know even it's Europe. Just we think it's when you go outside from Eritrea, it's like Italy, Italy. Okay. So when we came here and Sweden is around and Norway is different, okay. But before it was like Italy, so okay, Italy. We don't know nothing anymore. So, see, Italy is special in Eritrea, so we love also. Yeah, because it's also started bicycles because of Italian in Eritrea. It was the first race in Eritrea, Giro di Eritrea. Now it's Tour of Eritrea because of the English people is coming in Eritrea, but before it was Giro di Eritrea. So it's still special for Eritrean people.
What an amazing story. He's 175th overall. He's got his Israel Cycling Academy teammate, Guillaume Boivin, the Canadian rider, just ahead of him. The pair of them were off the back on stage two, having both crashed, I think. And what was strange standing out on the hill yesterday was to see just how many public vehicles were in basically in the race before the final, you know, the broom wagon came past to say that that's the race course closed. There were plenty of public cars in between, you know, the last group, which had Conor Dunn in it, and then Nico Denz of AG2R, who'd had, I think, quite a heavy fall at some point. He was on his own in between that last group and the two Israel Cycling Academy riders. The road closure's clearly not as strict here as they would be at the Tour de France, because life was returning to normal within around sort of 15-20 minutes of the front riders going through. But it's going to be, I think, a pretty tough assignment, isn't it, for a couple of those riders who've had early falls and are already sort of half an hour down overall.
Yeah, well, Awet fell yesterday. He said that he felt okay today. He's got through another stage. And certainly at that team, you know, they think he could go most of the way, if not all the way, here in this Giro. He's had some good results in the last couple of years in races in Portugal, and certainly someone who looks as though he can hold his own. And as you heard in that interview, he's not someone who is just content to ride around and possibly just make it to Verona. He wants to be a factor in this race in some way on some day. So yeah, we'll watch that with interest, Napalm.
Well, we'll see whether a few more riders get up the road tomorrow, because, you know, it's always it's a difficult day for everyone when only one rider goes in the break. And it's in, you know, why did no one else go with Sho Hatsuyama? Because, you know, if 3 or 4 other riders from the wildcard teams, or, you know,
well, because Lionel, the show must go on.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to go for dinner. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, in Frascati. We started this morning in Vinci, birthplace of Leonardo da Vinci. Tomorrow we finish in Frascati, home of a famous wine, but we are not sampling that wine, are we?
We're going to sample a different white wine.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to that. Before we go, we'd just like to thank some of the friends of the podcast who, along with our sponsors, enable us to cover the Grand Tours on a daily basis. So a big thank you to the following people who have signed up as friends of the podcast for 2019. And if you want to do the same, go to thecyclingpodcast.com/friends. Sign up. It's £15 for the year. I think there's already 7 friends of the podcast specials, including your excellent one, Daniel, with Marco Haller and Bernard Eisel, who came back from really bad crashes last year, a long kind of painful road to recovery. And my recent trip with Simon, the photographer, who's with us here on the Giro this week. We went to the 2 Ardennes Classics. But a big thank you to Benjamin Shave, Susan Spinks, Paige Nelson, Georgina Terry and Michael Joyce.
And to Rob Pugh, Ben Dool, Richard Corbett, Sarah Fletcher, Ben Dool again. He's done it twice.
Wow. Thank you, Ben Dool. That's very generous of you. We're going to need the pronunciation police on some of these names, aren't we?
Sorry, I struggle with the English names. I do.
Says it all, really, doesn't it? On that note, we'll see you again tomorrow. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Napalm.